All right, wonderful. Good morning, everyone, and a chodesh tov to everyone. I think we are going to begin. And thank you very much for joining us this morning for the learning for Parshas Noach. A pleasure to have everyone with us. And we do have a dedication this morning for the shir, a special dedication. The shir is dedicated by my aunt, Ethel Fisher, who recently made Aliyah to Israel. She wants to thank the OU Center for the wonderful shiurim that she attends on Zoom. And I'd like to dedicate with her this year, this morning, in memory of Ethel Fisher's mother, my grandmother, Minnie Goldschneider, Aleha HaShalom. Her yard site was just a couple of weeks ago, right before Sukkot. And the Torah that we learned this morning should be Le'iloi Nishmata. So a very special thank you to my aunt, Ethel Fisher, for dedicating the shiur this morning. Okay, so we're going to jump into Parshat Noach. We are focusing on the teachings of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And he addresses a very, very dramatic story in Parshat Noach. Babel itself, the flood and the ark, the Teva, and Noach and his family being saved on the Teva along with the animals. But there is another episode, another story in the Torah that happens right after they make their way off of the Teva, and I want to look at that story, that episode. And it's a very interesting story, an odd story to some degree. But a story that is going to be very, very critical in terms of the direction of the history of mankind, of humankind following the story of the Teva. So this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to take a few moments to look at the psukim, quickly move through the psukim. And I'm just noticing that in the Zoom group chat, you do have the makorot are there. Hopefully you're able to access that. We'll do a little bit of reading inside as part of our shiur this morning. So if you're able to open the download, again, which is found in the chat, that would be helpful. I think you'll enjoy seeing some of the makorot inside. So let's take a look at the story itself. Let's remind ourselves to review the story, flood. And Noach and his family make their way from the Teva back on earth again. And we know what happens. We know the basic storyline. Noach is going to plant a vineyard. He begins to drink. He gets drunk and does something that is embarrassing to himself. And then we have the response, we have the reaction of the children of the three sons of Noah. And each of their reactions, the way that they're going to respond to what happened to Noah, is going to be critical. And it's going to be critical in the eyes of Noah, in terms of his reaction to their response, and in terms of how it's going to play out for the rest of time. So let's just read a few psukim. Again, if you have the source sheet, I would recommend that you take a look at that. If you don't have the source sheet and you're sitting with a chumash, if you have a chumash in front of you, if you'd like to go to Perek Tet, and we're looking at Pasuk Yudchet, and I'll quickly just make our way through these psukim just to review the story and to highlight a few very important ideas. Vayhi b'nei Noach hayotzim min ha-teva, and you have the sons of Noach that are leaving the teva, Shem v'cham v'yafet. Okay, here are the names of the children, the names Cham, Yefet, and Shem. Here we go, the next Pasuk Yutet, Shlosha Ele B'nei Noach. Okay, that's a significant Pasuk. It says, from these, you will now have mankind spreading out throughout the world. So that in that Pasuk itself, there seems to be an introduction here to take note. The Torah is telling us, take note, to be aware of what is about to occur, not only in terms of these three personalities, three individuals, but what it means for the rest of time, what it means for the rest of history. And now we have the story again that we are familiar with. Vayachel Noach ish adama, vayita karem. And Noach plants a vineyard. Vayesh min hayayin, and he drinks of the wine. Vayishkar, and becomes drunk. Vayidgal betoch alon, and he reveals himself. Vayidgal, it means he's naked inside of his tent. We're now at Pasuk Chavet, Vayarcham. Now this is the key, and this is what we're going to focus on in terms of the reaction of the three children of Noach. Vayarcham avikanan. So Cham, one of the children, Cham, sees what has happened. He sees the nakedness of his father, and he tells his two other brothers, Bachutz, who are on the outside. Vayikach Shem v'Yefet et ha-simla. And Shem and Yefet take a simla, they take a garment, they take a cover, vayasimu al shechem shnehem, and they place it on their shoulders, vayelchu acharonit, and they walk backwards into the tent, vayichasu et ervat avihem, and they cover the nakedness of their father, ufenehem achoranit, and their faces are also looking in the other direction, meaning they're not looking at their father, ve'ervat aviyam lo ra'u, and therefore they did not see their father's nakedness. So again, right away we see a contrast between the brother Cham, the way that he reacts to it. He sees it. By the way, in this pasuk, the pasuk highlights that they don't look and they don't see it, that they look away. Instead, says that Cham sees the erva of his father, and also that he goes out and tells the brothers. The other two brothers, Shem and Yefet, they respond very differently, right? That they walk backwards, that they cover their father, that they cover his nakedness. Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayiketz Noach Miyeno, and Noach wakes up from his drunkenness, vayeda et asher asalo beno akatan, and he knows that which his young son did, what Cham did to him. Vayomer arur kenan eved avadim yelechav, he curses his son, and actually the way that it's phrased in the pasuk is that it's a curses to Kenan, his grandson. Again, there's some discussion there in terms of why it's not directly to Cham himself. But this is a curse to Cham, that this is going to be part of a curse that will be lasting in his lineage. Vayomer, so that is the reaction that Noach has to Cham, that he curses him. Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokeshem. But when it comes to the comes to Shem Lamo, and Canaan will serve them, Yef Yaf Elokim the Yefet. And here we have one other bracha, blessing, that's given to Yefet, that's going to be also incorporated within a blessing to Shem. Yaft Elokim the Yefet, that there should be beauty, or Hashem will provide beauty for Yefet. Vayishkon ba'alei Shem, and it will dwell within the tent of Shem. Vayihi Kenan Eved Lamo, and again, back to Kenan, back to the curse, that he will be a servant to them, that he'll be a servant to Shem and Yefet. Okay, that's the story in a nutshell. Those are the psukim. We can ask a number of questions, and we will ask a number of questions regarding this story. Let's begin here. Let's begin with a question that perplexed Rabbi Soloveitchik, with one of the questions that he asked, and that is, what is the sin of Cham? And why is it that Noach gets so angry with Cham? Why does he, again, he doesn't just get angry here. It's really that way. Okay. So let's begin with what Rabbi Soloveitchik, he doesn't quote this Ramban, but it seems to me that Rabbi Soloveitchik is referring to this Ramban in his answer. But I want to begin with the words of the Ramban, and then we'll elaborate on it in terms of where Rabbi Soloveitchik takes us. So let's look at the words of the Ramban, again, for those of you that are following along. Okay, so we're going to now look at the Ramban. And again, the question is, the Ramban is addressing the question in terms of trying to identify, to articulate the sin of Cham. So I'm going to read the Ramban. Let's just read it in the English for the sake of time. Now the sin that occurred, this is source number 3, for those of you that are following the source sheet. Now the sin that occurred in this episode was that Cham saw the nakedness of his father and did not act respectfully towards him. So it seems from the pasuk itself, and here the Ramban, I think, is very much looking at the pshat of the pasuk, the very, you know, the basic reading in the pasuk, and that is the fact that he saw the erva and maybe chose to see it, kind of like when you walk into a room and somebody's not dressed properly and to quickly turn away. But that's not what happens here with Cham. Sees it, and Cham, you know, continues to glance or to peer at his father, to look at his father. And the Ramban goes on, Shaya ra'ui lo l'chasot ervato. Interesting. Again, this is really a very basic reading of the pasuk and the contrast between the two. Look at what Cham does, and look at what the other brothers do, and look at the contrast between the two. They go ahead and right away, right, they quickly, you know, find a way to cover their father and to cover the shame of their father, that their father is not embarrassed. What does Cham do? Cham doesn't do that. Cham sees it, and he has the option of covering his father, but here he is walking outside, and it says Bachutz. He then leaves the area of the tent, and he goes to tell his brothers. For it would have, I'm back into the text and the translation of the Ramban, for it would have been proper for him to cover Noach's nakedness and to conceal his shame by not telling even his brothers about it. This is a very, very important point, and this is something that Rabbi Soloveitchik is going to pick up on, and that is that he had the option of taking care of this scenario, of this, without even his brothers knowing about it, without his siblings knowing about what happened, right? He could have easily covered up his father, right? He could have saved his father's embarrassment and not let others know about it. Okay. Even his own siblings, is there any reason why they need to know about this episode, about what the father, what Noach had done wrong here? And I read on in the words of the Ramban, but he in fact did tell his two brothers about the matter in public in order to scorn. V'zeh ta'am bachutz. The Ramban sees this word in the pasuk. The word bachutz means that it doesn't just say in the pasuk that he tells his brothers, but it says bachutz. What does it mean that he tells his brothers outside? So he quotes from the Targum Unklus. So the word bachutz here is bashuka, that he told them in the marketplace. The word chutz doesn't just mean that he stepped outside of Noach's tent, but bachutz, the way that the Ramban and the way that the Targum Unklus understands this, is bachutz means that it was out, that he put it out there, that he let others know about it, that he publicized the fact in some way, that he was anxious to let others know about the sin of his father, the transgression of his father, the mistake, the embarrassing mistake that his father made. And let me just read one more. This is the end of this Ramban. This is the meaning of, and he realized that his youngest son, what his youngest son had done to him. In other words, what does it mean when Noah wakes up and he realizes what his son did? Shigilah cherpato l'rabin. How do you know about it? What did he realize? Because he heard other people talking about it, right? He was aware that somehow that this went public, and it's something that did not necessarily have to be publicized. V'haya bosh bedavar. And Noach was embarrassed. This caused even greater embarrassment, right? It would have been one thing that one son would have noticed, would have walked in the room and saw something that he should not have seen, but that he went to tell others, that he went bachutz, that he went to the public place, the public thoroughfare, to share this with others. What a terrible thing, right? What a horrible sin that is in terms of the response and the reaction of Cham. The Rabotenu Hosifa Alav Chet. Now it's interesting, the Ramban ends and says that our rabbis have actually added even more to this sin in terms of identifying, defining what the sin was. And we'll see that in a few moments. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says that if we look at the personality of Cham and what Cham did, we see something that is that really is terribly inappropriate. Not only does he look at his father, right, maybe even continue to kind of peer at his father as his father is an embarrassing scenario, but it's something that he publicizes to others. Rabbi Soloveitchik says that there are those personalities, right, those people that are anxious to point out the flaws of others and to publicize the flaws of others, to embarrass others. He speaks about those that like to find, you know, within righteous people and tzaddikim, to try to undermine their tzidkus, their righteousness, and to show, and to kind of mock the other person and say, well, you think this person is a tzaddik, right? You think that Noach is a tzaddik. You think our father is a tzaddik, that this personality, right, is honored and has the respect of others. But let me tell you the truth, right? Let me share with you what I know about, right? Let me tell you these secrets about this person that people don't know about. And what a terrible midah that is, what a terrible character trait that is, to look at the faults of others, to highlight the faults of others, and to share that, to gossip, and to try to undermine others. Rabbi Soloveitchik says the following, and I want to read to you just a few lines from Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is Soloveitchik himself doesn't write this commentary, but it's a commentary that is that's put together by Dr. Arno Lustiger. It's a great work, very, very worthwhile, highly recommend it. Based on the teachings, based on the shiurim of Rabbi Soloveitchik. So this is what I want to just read a few lines from Rabbi Soloveitchik. The Torah does not justify Noach's behavior. And Abraham or Moses and Avram or Moshe would certainly have acted differently. Yet at the same time, one must remember that Noah had experienced an extraordinarily difficult time, responsible for the tempest-tossed ark and all its inhabitants while the outside world was being destroyed. In other words, he went through a very, very difficult experience. After his travail, he drank a little too much wine. It was in Noah's interest that this incident be forgotten, that his shame not be publicized. The Torah attests that Shem and Yefet did not see their father's nakedness. Why didn't they see what Ham saw? Because they, in conscience to Ham, did not want to reveal Noah's impetuous mistake. Okay, according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, what you have here is really a difference in terms of approach, in terms of intent, where Ham intentionally sees and looks for the mistakes of others. He publicizes those mistakes. And when it comes to Shem and Yefet, so they're not interested in seeing those mistakes. They rather cover them. They rather hide them and respect their father and respect others. Okay. I want to share another interpretation, which is brought in the commentary of Rashi, and this is alluded to by the Ramban that we just mentioned earlier in terms of elaborating on the sin of Ham and what Ham did. And here, this is, I think it's a well-known Rashi, but a very, very disturbing Rashi, and almost difficult. The comment of Rashi. This is taken. Rashi takes this. It's the opinions of Rav and Shmuel in terms of what the sin was, what Ham did when he entered the tent of Noach. And Rashi says the following, Vayar et Ervat Aviv. What does it mean that he saw his father's nakedness? Now, the word that's used in the Pasuk is the word Erva. And it seems that the Gemara understands here, or sees a hint in the Pasuk, that it wasn't just that they saw, that Ham saw an embarrassing scenario, but the word Erva usually refers to something within the realm of a sexual practice. So here, this is what Rashi says, Yesh Omrim Ser So. There are those that say that he castrated his father, that when Ham went into the tent, he castrated him. The Yesh Omrim Revao, that he committed an act of sodomy with his father, a sexual act with his father. These are the two opinions that Rashi brings. This is based on the Gemara. This is two opinions that are found in the Gemara. Rashi brings both opinions. And the question is, what does this mean? How do we understand this interpretation? Again, we saw the interpretation of the Ramban, which seems to be more grounded in the literal reading or the pshat of the pasuk, that he just saw something, he acted inappropriately in terms of telling the brothers, of highlighting, of making public the sin of Noah. But here, according to Rashi, we have an interpretation that kind of takes us another level, where the suggestion is that there's some sexual act which was done, right? Something that was done in the realm of Erva. And I wanted to share with you a very beautiful interpretation, or a poignant interpretation, that is brought by a grandson of Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik of Yeshiva University, his daughter marries Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein then makes Aliyah. He moves to Israel. That's a whole interesting discussion, where Rabbi Soloveitchik really did not want Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and his daughter to move to Israel. He was hoping he would be the next Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University in New York. But his son-in-law and daughter wanted to move to Israel. And they moved to the Gush. They moved to the area which many of us are familiar with today. And he goes to the yeshiva, which is called today known as the Gush of Har Etzion. And he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva along with Rav Amital. He passed away just a few years ago. And his son is now, who is the grandson of Rabbi Soloveitchik, is now the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Moshe, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, is the Rosh Yeshiva, a great Talmud Chacham, and a great Talmudist as well. So we have within the family, the Soloveitchik family, the dynasty of the Soloveitchiks, we have the continuation of that here in Eretz Yisrael and in the Gush. He writes about, he speaks about this this Rashi, revealing interpretation. He says that, what does it mean, the idea that he was ser so, that he made him, that he castrated him? So the way that he interprets this, well, we can understand it on a literal level, but a symbolic interpretation, maybe what the Midrash, what the Gemara is referring to, is that Ham no longer saw or respected his father. His father now, as an older man who had lost his vigor, who had lost his strength, that he no longer respected him as a person who could make a contribution to the world. And that's one way of understanding ser so. And in terms of Reva, that he committed a sexual act with his father. So Rav Moshe Lichtenstein suggests that maybe what this means is that he abused his father in some way. He exploited his father. And this we sometimes see with, unfortunately, as people get older and younger, the younger family members taking advantage of an older person that no longer has their strength, that no longer has their intellectual capabilities, taking advantage of that situation. That's what you have here with Ham. So we see that Ham, in terms of the personality of Ham, and it's actually very, very sad and very unfortunate to see this, that you have children of a tzaddik, of Noah, who is a tzaddik, Noah who saves the world, right? That God chooses him to save the world. He has three children, but one son in particular, this son Ham, as we see in the story, that he acts in a way that really smacks of rishut, of a wickedness, right? Of actions, of behavior, of conduct that is that's terrible, right? Terrible in terms of how he treats his father, what he does to his father, whether it's embarrassing his father, or as Rashi says, right, doing something even more serious than that. Okay. And now we can understand, at least we can begin to understand the reaction of Noach and the way that he responds to this son. And this son no longer has a place in terms of the leadership, in terms of what it means to be the next, you know, father or the fathers of mankind. If you think about it, right, these three personalities, Shem, Ham, and Yefet, are now going to be the next, the building blocks, the foundation of the world, of humankind, as it's going to relaunch itself on earth after the flood. So Noah says that you are cursed, you are going to be an Eved, you're going to be subservient, you're going to be a servant to your brothers. You have no place in terms of for others as the world begins to relaunch itself. Okay, so that's kind of the sad part of the story. But what I'd like to turn to right now is the reaction of the other two brothers. And we're going to see that they, as we know, that they respond appropriately. But there is going to be a distinction, a very important distinction, between the way that Shem reacts and the way that Yefet reacts. Right? The son Shem and the son Yefet, they both do that which is proper. But there's going to be a very, very important distinction between the two. So what do we know? We know, and it says in the Pasuk, going back to, if you want to just look at the Pasuk for a moment, this is Pasuk Chav Gimel, 23, Vayikach, Shem v'yefet et asimla. Right, in contrast to what their brother does, right away, it says, Vayikach Shem v'yefet et asimla, Vayasumu al Shechem Shnehem. Right, they take the simla, they take the garment, they take the cover, they put it on their backs, they walk in, and they cover their father. Okay. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi points out that the very first word in the Pasuk is not in the plural. It should say, Vayikhu Shem v'yefet, that the two of them together in the plural, Vayikhu, that they together took the simla. But it does not say that. It says, Vayikach, in the singular. Now, in the singular means that one of them did it, even though we're going to see that two of them are going to be, you know, are going to work together. But somehow it seems, and this is what Rashi is going to point out, that one of them takes the initiative. It's one of them, and we know it's going to be Shem that is going to be the one that is that steps up first. So let's take a look at the Rashi. This is if you're looking at the source sheet, this is page 2. And on the second source where it says Pasuk 23, Vayikach Shem v'yefet, Ein ketiv vayichu. Rashi says the two of them do not take it together. It doesn't say in the plural, Eler vayikach, but it says in the singular, only one of them. Limeid al Shem. So this teaches us that Shem, and Shem's name is mentioned first in the Pasuk, it teaches us something in particular about the action of Shem, Shenitametz b'mitzvah, that he was the one who took initiative. He was the one who was more eager to perform the mitzvah, yoter miyefet, more so than Shem. Now, interesting, by the way, the word mitzvah that's used here by Rashi, it's not a mitzvah per se. Now, there's not a mitzvah in terms of the 613 mitzvah of the Torah, but mitzvah in the sense of obligation, of feeling a sense of responsibility or obligation to respond in this situation, where their father has been embarrassed, that their father is sitting in the tent, that he's drunk, that he's sitting there naked, that it's shame who responds first to that, yoter miyefet. Now here we have the following statement that's made, which is based on the Medrash that Rashi quotes, in terms of the reward that's given to shame and the reward that's given to yefet. And there is a distinction between the two. And here Rabbi Soloveitchik is going to offer a very beautiful interpretation in explaining what is really a very puzzling medrash, as we're about to see right now. So the kach zachu bana, therefore they merited, each of the children merited, these two sons merited a very special gift in the future. So it says letalit shel tzitzit. It says that therefore Shem, meaning the descendants of Shem, will receive the mitzvah of tzitzit. And of course, that's referring to the Jewish people, that we are the descendants of Shem. That's going to be a very, very important part of this whole story in terms of where we fit in as Jews, going back to the son by the name of Shem. But he receives, based on his actions, right, based on the fact that he was the one to take the cover and place it on his father, that he's the one that initiated, that he was the one who was more eager to do it, therefore, he is going to receive the mitzvah of tzitzit, meaning the Jewish people in the future will have the mitzvah of tzitzit. The yefet, but when it comes to yefet, what was his reward? And we see, by the way, that there is a distinction in terms of reward, that it's not equal their action, their response. The yefet zacha l'kvura lebanav. It says that in the future, that his children will be zocha to kvura, to burial. Now, what is that referring to? So that's a pasuk in Yechezkel that it talks about the descendants of Yefet, where it says, "Etein leGog makom sham kever." It says that in the future time, that the people of Gog, which is understood to mean the descendants of Yefet, that they will receive Kivura. Okay. Rabbi Soloveitchik here asks a very simple question, and that is, how do we understand this Midrash? What does it mean that one receives tzitzit, the mitzvah of tzitzit, and one receives the mitzvah of kvura? And here he's going to conceptualize, he's going to give us an insight in terms of what these two represent, what these two gifts, or these this future schar, the reward that they're going to receive, what it represents, what it suggests in terms of their actions. So he says the following: when it comes to tzitzit, he quotes the halacha that tzitzit are worn under the garment, that they are worn under one shirt. Yes, the tzitzit, the fringes themselves, are worn on the outside. But he quotes from the Shulchan Aruch that the halacha is that you wear the tzitzit underneath your garment. What does that represent? What that represents is an act that is not publicized per se, but it's something that we do because we feel a sense of responsibility. We feel a sense of mitzvah, of obligation. And that's what Shem did in this circumstance. That's what he did in this scenario. That he acted, he responded in a way because he felt a moral obligation, an ethical obligation, right? A responsibility to take care of the situation, that his father had embarrassed himself. And therefore, it's my obligation, it's my ethical responsibility, it's my moral responsibility to do that which I can to step up, to do that which I can to correct, and to do the most that I can to help my father in this scenario. But that's not true of Yefet. Yefet's response is a different response. His response is not necessarily motivated by morality and ethics, but rather it's motivated by a sense of what Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests is etiquette. That it's the right thing to do. I see my brother, that he's responding in this way. I see my father in this situation. Right? Let me respond that in terms of what's appropriate, right? In terms of etiquette, in terms of helping my brother, in terms of helping my father, that I'll be responsive in this case. And he says that that's what kvura represents as well. That kvura is giving kavod to the mace, right? Dignity to the body, that not allowing a body just to sit, but a body to be buried properly. So he says, here you have a very, very important distinction between the actions of the brothers. One which is motivated by an ethical or a moral imperative in terms of responding to that which I feel a responsibility to respond to, that I feel an obligation to respond to. Whereas shame is not responding in the same manner, right, with the same intent. That he's responding to it and he does the right thing, but it's not done out of a sense of morality and ethics or responsibility, but rather out of a sense of what he feels is appropriate, or what, again, the term that Rabbi Soloveitchik uses here is to contrast the ethical, an act of ethics, and an act of etiquette. An act of ethics and an act that relates to a sense of etiquette, of acting properly, of acting dignified. Again, that's not wrong. We're not saying that what Yefet does in this case is wrong. He does something that is right. He does something that is appropriate, but it doesn't achieve the higher level, which is acting as a person that feels a sense of morality, a sense of what is ethical, a sense of what is right, and a responsibility, a personal responsibility to respond in that way. And Rabbi Soloveitchik, I think that he doesn't quote this Nitziv, but I believe that this is the source, or a source, that he may be working off of. And this is source number 3 on your page. And I just want to read a line or two from the Nitziv, where the Nitziv, the Hameg Davar, also deals with this question in terms of the difference between shame and Yefet. Again, and clearly there is a difference in terms of the reward for the two, right? In terms of what Rashi points out, that it says in the singular Vayikach that only one of them responded in that way. What does it mean that only shame is the one to respond, is the most eager to respond? So let's look at the words of the Hameg Davar. I'm on the top line. If, again, you have the source in front of you on the second column, He speaks about what shame does. Ela mishum deshem haya hergesho mishum mitzvah. Interesting, and I pointed that out in the Rashi before, that his feeling, his hergesh, right? What was his emotion? What was his response? Why was he eager, and why was he the first to do it? Because he felt mishum mitzvah. Now, again, I would say that the word mitzvah, the way that Tziv is using the word mitzvah, doesn't mean the classical sense that there is an obligation to do this, meaning it's not one of the 613 commandments of the Torah. But mitzvah in the sense that he felt a moral responsibility, right? That he felt that this is the right thing to do. That I see my father in this situation, and I must respond in this way. Right? This is my responsibility. I am mitzvah, that I have an obligation as a child, right? As a person that cares about another individual, I have an ethical, I have a moral responsibility to respond, to be responsive, to do that which I can to help in this situation, to come to the aid of somebody else in need. That's what shame does. That's what shame does. Now, that's going to be very, very significant, and significant in terms of the personality of shame, who shame represents, and who Yefet represents. And we're going to see that in the bracha that's given, that Noach is going to give to these two sons. So let's go back to the bracha now. Let's look at the bracha that's given to Shame and Yefet. So we have the following. Let's go to the very last pasuk in this episode, which is pasuk Chav Zayin. And this is a reflection of this idea that I just suggested, or Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested, and he's going to read it in the psukim, in the pasuk itself. Pasuk Chav Zayin, Yaft Elokim li Yefet. What does Noach say for Yefet? That there's going to, I'm going to extend beauty within Yefet. However, Vayishkon Ba'al Shem. But he will dwell within the tent of shame. Okay, now what does that mean? It's actually a very obscure, very difficult pasuk. Right? What is Noach saying? Right? What is the blessing that Noach is giving to Yefet? And what is the blessing? What is the bracha that Noach is giving to Shem? So let's look at it. Those of you that have page 3, if you're able to look at the text, I want to take a look at this together with you. Just a few lines from Rabbi Soloveitchik. And Rabbi Soloveitchik offers the following explanation in just a few words. So what does it mean, Yaft Elokim liYefet vayishkon ba'al shem? May God expand Yefet and may he dwell in the tents of shame. The word Yefet or Yaft, I'm reading now from the words of Rabbi Soloveitchik, just 2-3 lines, carries the connotation of beauty, right? We all know that word, the word Yafet, right? He's called Yafet, Yefet, and the blessing is Yaft Elokim liYefet. Noach blessed Yefet with an appreciation for beauty, for style, and for etiquette. In other words, those are the characteristics, right? Those are the traits that are going to be defining in terms of Yefet's personality. What Yefet is all about, right? He does have an inclination. He does have an understanding of an appreciation of what is beautiful, right? What is appropriate, or what Rabbi Soloveitchik uses as etiquette, as proper etiquette. That he does have. However, that only goes so far, right? That's a good midah. It can be a good midah. Again, it might go either way. It can be a good midah, but it only goes so far. However, and here listen to the words of Rabbi Soloveitchik, the divine presence, the Shekhinah, however, would reside in the tents of shame. A concern for externals alone is insufficient to attain the divine presence. In order to merit the Shekhinah, man must act ethically and morally in the private as well as public domain. So that's taken from the Masorat HaRav originally in the Nefesh HaRav, which is written by Rav Hershel Schachter. Okay, Shlita. So what do we have here? What's the Oal Shem? The Oal Shem, the Oal of Shame represents the tent of shame. The tent of shame where divine presence, where the Shekhinah dwells. Because of that act of shame, because of the ethical, because of the moral action of shame, God is responsive to that. However, when we talk about Yefet, he is only found, that beauty of Yefet, the etiquette of Yefet, right, is only found when it's in, right, it's only blessed when it's in the Ohal Shem, when it's within that setting, right, with an appreciation of morality. There is a vort that I remember from years ago from the Vilna Gaon, and it's a pasuk that we're all familiar with from Eishes Chayil. Sheker achein behevel ayofi isha yirat Hashem ititalal. So the first part of the pasuk, it says sheker achein behevel ayofi, that when it comes to yofi, when it comes to beauty, right, all of that is that's sheker. There's nothing that is that's worthwhile in that area. And by the way, that the same word here of yofi and like yefet. But the Vilna Gaon says that's not the case. You have to read the full pasuk. Isha yirat Hashem hi titalal. A person who has yirat Hashem, right? That person is praised not only for the yirat Hashem, but for the yofi and for the chein as well. In other words, when yofi and chein, when beauty is used for appropriate, in an appropriate setting, in an appropriate way. So then that is something that does take on kedusha. That's something that can be elevated. But it's only elevated within a moral and an ethical, structure, a moral or ethical sphere. So this is what we have. We have three personalities, and three that all respond differently to the situation at hand, to a very, to a difficult situation. Where you have Noah, who acts improperly, who embarrasses himself, who finds himself naked in the tent. We have one son that acts in a very inappropriate way, right? That is Ham. Interesting, by the way, just look at the names of the three individuals. And here the Maharal talks about this, and others who make note here. It's true in the Torah across the board. When we look at the name of a person, very often the name of a person reveals a little bit more about the person or the true essence of the person. So when we talk about Cham, so what is the name Cham? That's somebody, that's heated, right? Somebody who's impetuous, right? He acts in a way that is like the word mazid, right? Mazid, that you act in a way that that you follow your yetzahara, right? This burning desire that is used in an inappropriate way. So that is Cham. And then you have Yefet. What is the word Yefet? We're all familiar with the word Yefet, which relates to the word Yafeh, right? We have an individual who is concerned more in terms of etiquette, right? In terms of the beauty and what is appropriate. Again, that can be used in a positive way. There's potential that's used positively. But the ultimate, right? The one that acts appropriately, and in a noble way, is shame. And shame, by the way, interesting, the name shame, which relates to Hashem, right? The name acts in accordance with God and with the will of God. It's interesting, by the way, the Midrash says, going back to the sin of Cham, the Gemara actually says that on the Teva itself, that they were forbidden to have relations with one another during the time that they were on the Teva. And that was true both for the animals and for the people that were on the Teva. The Gemara says that there were a number of those who sinned. It says that the Kelev, that the dog sinned and had relations. It says that the raven sinned and had relations on the Teva. And the Gemara says that Cham sinned as well on the Teva. So it's interesting in terms of that interpretation, thinking about considering the personality of Cham, who Cham was. So as I said earlier, it's very, very unfortunate, very sad to see how Cham acts in this situation, how he acts as they exit the Teva, and what he does to his father. I'd like to conclude with the following, and this Rabbi Soloveitchik doesn't say, but I think it's something that he's alluding to. In terms of looking at this story, looking at what happens here in the context of man and the future of mankind. And we have three personality types, typologies that begin to be the fathers, right? To be the founders of new life, of the life of man on earth, right? We have somebody, and I would use three terminologies here that are that we use within a Jewish context of personality traits. We have a Rasha, where we just use these terms when we spoke about the tshuva of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the high holidays, right? We have the Rasha, we have the Beinoni, and we have the Tzadik. We have the Rasha, the Beinoni, and the Tzadik. And it seems in these three personalities, you could say that we have these typologies, these personality types. Right, Cham in this instance is a Rasha. He's a Rasha, again, the way that he acts, the way that he embarrasses his father, the way that he goes bachutz, that he goes outside, that he publicizes that which happens. As Rabbi Soloveitchik says, he looks to undermine. He, in some way, and in a terrible way, right, he's happy. He finds some, you know, joy in seeing the downfall, right, in highlighting the mistakes in others. So that's Rishut, right? That's Rishut. And this is one personality type in terms of when we look at the nations of the world and we look within our nation, within the Jewish nation as well. Then you have the Beinoni, right? You have somebody sort of, you know, in the middle. It can go either way, right? And this seems to be the personality of Yefet. He does respond here. He does, you know, he helps his brother. When his brother enters the tent, his brother first takes the, you know, takes the garment to cover his father. He's there to help him. As Rabbi Soloveitchik wants to argue, yes, he is concerned with etiquette, with the appropriate, what's appropriate in this situation, right? How I can be helpful to you, how I can be helpful to our father in this scenario. Again, not a bad thing. And he is blessed. He does receive a blessing. But it's not the ultimate blessing. It's not the ultimate blessing. The ultimate blessing is the blessing and the ultimate act of nobility, of righteousness, is the act of shame. The act of shame. And shame here acts right away. He acts knowing that he has, in the words, in the word of the Netziv, that he feels that there's a mitzvah. He feels that there's obligation, that I have responsibility to come to the aid of my father, to the aid of my fellow man. And do what I can to cover up, right? To try to conceal the mistake of another human being, of another individual. So this is shame, and this is for all of us, right? This is a lesson, right? In terms of where do we fall, right? What do we aspire to be? Of course, we don't want to be Rishayim. We don't want to be Beinonim either. We want to be descendants of, we want to walk in the footsteps of shame. And here, the Torah tells us that this is the future of the Jewish people. By the way, there's something else that we know about shame that's going to come along a little bit later in the Torah. And that is that when Yaakov runs from his home after he takes the blessings, or he steals the blessings, so Rashi points out that on his way, he makes a stop. And he studies in a study hall, and it's called the Yeshiva of Shame, the Aver. It's the Yeshiva of Shame. So we know something else about shame. We actually don't know very much about it. We know a little bit here in these few psukim in Noach, but then the Medrash points out that he is the founder of a Beis Medrash, of a study hall. Again, they're not studying Gemara yet. We don't have Gemara. We don't have the Torah yet. But he's teaching. He's teaching ethics. He's teaching morality. He's teaching the idea of responsibility, the responsibility of man to their fellow man, the responsibility of man to God, a sense of feeling of knowing that one is mitzuveh, that one has an obligation here on this earth. This is what shame is about. This is what shame teaches. And if you look at the lineage, and I have this, I printed this from the Art Scroll has this in their Chumash, the chronology and the descendants going from Adam all the way through Yaakov. But if we pick it up with Noach, again, for those of you that possibly have the source sheet, I'm looking at page 3, the second source. If you look, Noach, it's right in the middle of the chart. So Noach we know has 3 sons, but here we're just following the lineage of the Jewish people, the descendants from Noach. So Noach has a son, Shem. And from Shem, and I'll just read out the names to you, you have Arpachshad, and then Shela, and then Eber, Peleg, Reu, Serug, Nahor, Terach, and then Avraham, and then Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So when we trace our lineage, right, when we go back to the founders of our people, the fathers of our people, we all know that, of course, we go back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But Avraham is a descendant of Shem, That our story begins, I mean, we all know the story begins with Adam and Chava, and then to Noach. But Noach has three sons. We are not the descendants of Cham. We are not the descendants of Yefet, right? We are the descendants of Shem. And it begins right here, the story of our people, right? The very foundation, the building blocks of what it means to be a Jew, right? To live in this world with a sense of obligation, of being a mitzvah, and a sense of morality and ethics. Again, Shem does not become, he does not become the father of our people, right? He doesn't become great in that way. But the very foundation, the very beginnings, right? The seeds are planted in the actions of Shem in this story. And that's why this episode is an important story in terms of, you know, of learning about what happened to Noach and what happened to his family. But I think it's also a very, very significant story in terms of laying out for us what the Torah is interested in teaching us in terms of what it means to be a Jew, right? And what it means to answer to the authority of God, and to answer to a sense of responsibility and morality and ethics. And this we see in the actions of Shem.